Okay, good evening, everybody. Welcome to NLA's weekly call. Today is Monday, March 14, 2022. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, go to National Liberty Alliance and click on the weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browsers. If anyone would like to email a question, send them to questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. See the banners on the right side of our website, of which the proceeds support NLA's effort to save the Republic. Also, please support the NLA by donating $5 a month or more and click on our donation tab on the top right. Tonight's scripture reading, we'll start with John 2, I believe it is, and then we'll move on into the queue. John is not going to be with us. He's still recuperating from the operation that he had, and is still pretty sore, so hopefully he'll be back here next week in his normal slot here. Okay, thank you very much. Now, hang on, just let me get to my scripture reading. Okay, here we are.
Chapter 2. And the third day there was a marriage in Cana of Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. And both Jesus was called and his disciples to the marriage. And when they wanted wine, the mother of Jesus saith unto him, They have no wine. Jesus saith unto her, Woman, what have I to do with thee? Mine hour is not yet come. His mother said unto the servants, Whatsoever he saith unto you, do it. And there were set there 6 water pots of stone.
I'm not hearing anything, Gerard.
With 3 firkins apiece. Jesus saith unto them, Fill the water pots with water. And they filled them up to the brim. And he saith unto them, Draw the water pot and bear unto the governor of the feast. And they bear it. The ruler of the feast had tasted.
Gerard?
Hello?
I'm not hearing anything.
Oh, hang on. Let me see. I don't know what's going on here. Hang on.
It sounded like it's running way in the background, about a mile away.
Let me see if I can fix that. I don't know. I never had to set this on anything special to do that. On preferences. Let me just see here real quick. Try this. I don't know if it's going to work or not. I don't know why it's not coming through, really. I don't know if I got a setting that I'm supposed to click here, but I don't see that in the Start Meeting app. All right, let me try again and see what happens. See if that works.
Chapter 2. And the third day there was a marriage in Cana.
Are you hearing that?
I hear it way back in the background. I can't understand what he's saying. I do hear him, but I can't understand me so far back. Maybe we have to give up on that today.
Maybe, because I have no idea what to do. I didn't do anything last time but click on the MP3 file. Let me try a different file and see if it works, just for giggles.
Chapter 3. There was a man of the Pharisees named Nicodemus.
Is that any better? You didn't hear it.
Nope, I didn't hear it.
All right, so I guess we'll give up on that reading. Okay. So the next step here is whether or not we have any announcements. I don't see Brent here yet, so we're just going to have to wing this week because, again, John's not here, and I didn't find out till today that he wasn't going to be on, so I didn't really prepare anything. I mean, there's plenty to talk about in the news cycle, that's for sure. Never a dull moment, obviously. Now, I don't know if Jan is here. Is there any announcements, Jan, if you are there?
Yep, I'm here. There really aren't any announcements tonight, and no one has sent in a question so far.
Oh, well, it's going to be...
That's no help at all to you, John.
It's going to be quiet. Oh, I don't care. We go on to the next thing. What do we got here? Let me just browse through, see. Okay. All right. I see who's here, but... All right. So we have no questions and no announcements. Terry, you have anything or no?
The question one was just a video that said that they wanted to show, but there's no question in it.
Okay, it was a video?
Yeah, and right. You might announce how people can get in the queue if they're on a telephone.
Yeah.
I think it's what? Star 6-1, is that right?
I think so. Star 6-1 after you dial in.
Right.
Yeah.
So star 6-1 will put you in the queue. We have one person in the queue at the moment. Let me just look at my cheat sheet here. Did I read everything off about... Well, I do, you know, we have a standing reminder of the campaign for sheriffs, and we'd like people to report problems with advancing in the courses if they can't get ahead. Send an email to mail@nla.org. Now, last week there was a couple people that said they had problems. I don't know if those were cleared up, but they should let us know if they were not. I don't know if this is... An old announcement is...
Gerard?
Yeah?
We're still having problems with the civics course.
Okay.
Terry was able to post a notice that it's down for maintenance. And if you click on the civics course itself, you'll get that message. If you click on continue the course, we haven't figured out how to put the message up yet. So it'll just... You won't be able to continue.
Right.
So hopefully we'll be able to... One, get the whole thing fixed, or at least get the warning up there that it's not operational.
Right.
Getting a lot of emails, and poor Kathy keeps getting hit on because they send them to her first, and then they send them to me, and I send them to Terry, so we all get in the loop.
Is that called the pecking order?
I think so.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. That's the way it is.
So. Hopefully everybody's working on their committees of safety, which consists of committees of correspondence, a militia committee, the committee man committee, jury administrator committee, sheriff's committee, education committee, and other committees. You look at every county's going to do what they need to do, but those are the main committees that you should be. Look, certainly you should be working with your sheriff. Obviously, that's one of the most important ones. Anyway, we have a lot of stuff, you know, that we can do and a lot of stuff that the committees of safety can work on, and they can kind of mirror what we've been doing anyway as far as, the papers that we filed and, all the different things that we've sent papers in. Each now we know that we can work on a local level and that you can pull bonds and do all this other stuff. So that stuff becomes much more pertinent, you know, in as far as what you can do on a local level with your county boards, your school boards, your town boards. With a committee of safety, you're going there as a force of people. it's a force of one, but it's many, and they've had some really good results. So let's keep that going. That's important. That's kind of what we're about, you know. And you know, at some point we're gonna revisit the cases that are laying up at the Supreme Court that they've unlawfully closed on us, you know, and didn't give us our jury trial that we should get, instead of them telling us we have no standing or any other such baloney that they pull, so they don't have to answer the questions that they don't want to answer. And that's what's going on. And you see a lot of the same thing even with this pandemic and this election, how they skirt the issues and just the pat things that they use all the time. So anyway, if we have nothing else, I'm going to go ahead into the queue and see. We've got a couple of people in there anyway, and then we'll move on from there. Let's see. We have Paulina. Orlinus Paulina? Okay, go ahead, Paulina. You're unmuted.
It's actually Oscar Alvarez.
It's
Paulina.
Sorry. Okay, Oscar, I'm sorry. I had no idea.
No, it's all good. I was in here just to figure out how do you get a committee going. I've been reading little by little on it. I got a few people that have been reading on the hire, you know, build a committee or a Liberty Committee, and how do you, you know, work on like affidavits and stuff like that.
Have you gone through our website where the drop down menus on how to start a committee of safety and that type of stuff?
I read some of it. I've been a busy person here lately, just trying to mm-hmm. help others win some state primaries. So.
Well, when we talk about a committee of safety, we're not talking about a political committee. A committee of safety
right.
is different, right?
No,
I mean, you we do wish that you would be active in those political committees, like becoming a committee man, like let's say for the Democrat or Republican Party to that way you have a say on who's being presented for election. Trouble is
right.
They're so overtaken now. It's going to take time to penetrate that and get rid of the deep state, so to speak. The ones that are in there now running things, you know, and your chairman that are like entrenched. I mean, not to say that you can't do it, and it's been done in some counties, but it depends on, you know, if you can get in there with a force of people that are active, you can do it. But in the
right.
meantime, you still should be doing what our forefathers did, and that's starting committees of safety, which then, you know, includes the Committee of Correspondence and these other committees. And our forefathers created committees of safety because it was much like what's going on today. It was very hard to talk. There was, you know, they had soldiers stationed in people's houses, you know, whether they, you know, because that's how they spied on them. And you know, if you get friendly with your captors, you get some Stockholm syndrome going on. And that's probably what they were hoping for too, to get people sympathetic to the crown. You know, today we got our cell phones, and they spy on us with our cell phones and everything else. They got more ways of seeing what we're doing. But a committee of safety, you meet in person, and you talk about local problems, and then you have local solutions, and then you implement them. And we do have. You know, some of the basic steps that you should take in order to establish it and to create it officially, because, you know, you send certain things out to the sheriff and this one and that one in the county, and you announce yourself. And we're not hidden, really. You know, not to say that we don't have meetings that, you know, are not publicized as far as, you know, out there in the public, but, you know, open discussion on what's going on is very important. That's how a lot of people don't even realize what's going on in their schools, their school boards, their counties, and their county boards. And that's where, you know, we've utilized the method of the Edgar County watchdogs. And they have even put on some seminars for NLA, and we hope that that will continue in the future, and we encourage everybody that can to schedule a time with them that they can get your county going, your town too. So that's what I can tell you about that. Make sure you go back up there to the drop down and read, you know, the steps, and try to take the steps of getting that Committee of Safety announced and kind of written in there, so that you have some credibility anyway.
Okay.
All right. Anything else?
Nope, that's pretty much it.
Okay. So we'll move over to Sherry Lynn, our next person in the queue, next victim. Go ahead, Sherry.
Hello, everyone. I am the Committee of Safety Leader for Lee County, Florida.
Okay, welcome. Thank you.
I love National Liberty Alliance. I'm so glad to be a part of this community. But I wanted, my question was, has anyone else besides me filed the Fauci COVID-19 dossier for their county yet?
That's a good question, and that's everybody should be doing that. When you talk about filing, is those are those the ones that are getting filed with the local prosecutor?
Yes, it's Dr. David E. Martin. He
right.
sent it out, and mm-hmm. I did it on February the 14th. Actually, I got it to them on the 21st, but we started it on February the 14th. I sent it to the county prosecutor's office. I followed up with them. They still have not done anything, so then I went with the next step, and I sent the notice to the sheriff's department with a copy of all of the statutes and codes that go with the dossier, so that he knows what codes and stuff to look up and to follow up with the county attorney. Now, he has not gotten back to me yet. I was just wondering if anyone else has done it in any other counties.
You know, I don't know. I don't know of who has yet or anything like that. You know, I have another program that I do on Patriot Soapbox, and I ran through that David Martin video. We should probably do it here at NLA. I don't know if John has done that. I don't think so. But
well,
that video that David Martin put out, where he gives the information of what he wants done, I think that's a very good video.
Yes. And it's awesome the way that he lays everything out step by step how to do it. So my other reason behind that is it's a 205-page dossier, and it has a 5-page like a background, like a breakdown. So
yeah, a summary, right?
Yeah, a summary. Thank you. And if you all would like this, I can email the file to you so that you can put this on National Liberty Alliance.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's very important. I was blown away when I started reading it.
Listen, we should have had it already. I feel bad because I'm very much into this, and I've been preaching it, but I haven't actually put pen to paper and made sure, you know, and also made sure that everybody is doing it in
yeah, we got to stop them from giving it to the children. It's bad.
No, it's terrible. It's ridiculous. So I can't believe it's still going on. It's so terrible.
Yeah.
And look at, by the time everybody wakes up, I'm almost afraid it's going to be too late.
I know. That's why we got to stop it now. Because
they're look at who they're targeting. All our frontline workers, our military, our police, you know, fires,
yeah,
this, that.
And
our children. I mean, could you think of it any more insidious way of ruining a country?
I know. I pray for the little children. We gotta pray for the little children. It's just horrific, the stuff that they're doing.
And it's so damaging to them. I don't know if they realized how bad this was going to be as far as myocarditis in little boys. Well, little boys, from whatever age to 30, it seems to show itself as that myocarditis in boys for some reason.
Yeah, and I've had a lot of friends and family members that got it, and a lot of them are dying or really seriously injured.
And that's what's happened, and that's what's waking people up, because they didn't intend for everybody to show all at once. They knew that this thing was going to be a slow kill and that it would work over the period of 4 years, and when people died of this disease and that disease, they would never point it back to the vaccine that they took a year or two or three or even 4 years before. But that, you know, and of course, they're always going to call it something else. They're not going to say that it was the result of your body producing spike proteins, you know.
Wow. Well, if anybody would love to have this information, they can email me. It's Sherry, S-H-E-R-R-I, at SherryLynn.com, or you can go to Sherry at my-CBD-health.org and email me, and I will send you, I will let you download all of it so we can get this done. We've got
yeah.
to
do it. Why don't you send that also to, I'm going to say Jan, so that he has it. And then I'll get with Jan and see how we can disseminate it on the site, because it's very important. And,
And the civics test, I can't go any further. I'm still stuck. I have emailed, but nothing has changed, and I'm stuck. I'm almost at the end of the course, and I wanted to finish that.
We still have a problem. It's not fixed yet. There's a notice that's put on that will come up if you go in one way, but if you go in the other way, it doesn't give you the notice that
yeah, that it's like part, froze. It's like froze, and it won't
right,
do
right.
anything. Yeah.
So we're going to try to get that fixed as quick as possible. You know, with John being in the hospital, and our tech guy had some personal problems at home, and I don't think he's back yet. So we're kind of hobbled a little bit until that clears up, right? And I pray that happens.
I will send this to Jan, and then anyone else that would like to have it, you're more than welcome to email me, and I will send it to you too and explain exactly what I've done so far and how to do it. Because if every county, if every single committee of safety county leader and would come together and do this step by step, we could really make a big difference real quick.
Yeah, actually send it to me too, Gerard at NLA.org, I believe it is.
Okay, I'll see it up here. I'll do that.
Okay, so, yeah, because I'd like to have it. And I was going to ask you, you have a committee of safety going? You started
yes,
one?
Yes, I started it, but I've been trying to talk to people. It's hard to get anyone to do anything here in Lee County. I have been in the back door, it's like our community board that we all go on. I cannot get anybody to do anything. The mainstream media has people so brainwashed, and Facebook and the CDC, the stuff they're putting on Facebook, I've gotten kicked off on how many times because they're telling people it's safe, and then I get on there and start running my mouth because I don't want people to take it, and they keep banning me. So now I'm kicked off again and banned again, and they tell me if I get one more strike, I'm banned for life. The only reason I keep it is try to help people to wake up.
Yeah, well, listen, right now they're banning you, and they would love to start arresting us people that talk. With the charge of misinformation, you know, we talk about a broad term there, right? Who determines what's misinformation? My goodness, First
yep.
Amendment is laying dead in the street, you know. But anyway, how many people you have in your committee of safety about?
I've only got three.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a start.
And I took my constitutional course, so I would know my constitution. I was on the civics course. I read everything on National Liberty Alliance first because I wanted to be real educated. I didn't want to go in half educated and not know what I'm talking about. So I've been educating myself, and I do my own podcast, too, to try to wake people up. I'm a country gospel singer, so I've been trying to use my webpage and my podcast to wake people up and let them know about the committees of safeties and National Liberty Alliance. And I have a podcast called Constitutional Corner, where I've been trying to help people understand the Constitution and how we need to stand up for our freedoms and fight back.
It's very important. And do you believe in cloning?
Huh?
Do you believe in cloning?
I read about it.
I'm only teasing because
it,
I would love to clone you.
Well, God only made one of me. Trust me. Yeah, so, one of me.
the only way we can clone you is through video. Okay. No, you're doing a good job, and it's good to hear.
Well, my web address is sherrylynn.com. Sherry with an I, L-Y-N-N, just like it's spelled up.
I'll check it out, sherrylynn.com. Thank you very much, Sherry.
Thank you.
And we need more of that, people. We need more people to step up to the plate. And I think, I don't know, I feel that there's going to be more of an awakening soon. That people are going to, I mean, look, you know so many people that have faced this whole vaccination thing by losing people, and they're not asleep anymore. You know, anybody that ever went through this and it was very obvious that it was a shot, they're pretty much, you're not going to put them back to sleep. And that this whole thing was a hoax, and it was a hoax. No mistake about it. There was no pandemic at all. And the only pandemic is the shot, which is the bioweapon, which is the greatest crime, worldwide crime against humanity that has ever been perpetrated. And that's why we need to do these things to stop these people from ever doing this again.
Right, and the other pandemic is the child trafficking. It is horrific. God's been having me pray for little children since 2019, and I mean pray. And sometimes when I'm praying, I see like little children in dark places and all kinds of stuff going on. And they've been rescuing little children from the dumps, and they've been rescuing little children from all the tunnels and from child trafficking rings. And I see people getting busted left and right, and I thank God for that.
Yeah, but they don't put it on the mainstream media, and that's the problem.
No.
People get their information from the mainstream media, and until it gets there, they're not going to believe it. They're going to look at you like you got three heads, what you just said. What are you talking about? And when it does get revealed finally, and I'm hoping they hurry up, because I don't know how much more of this we can take. You know, they say, oh, well, you know, people have to experience the pain and all this. Look, if you don't think people are experiencing pain, now, I know the more income you have and the more upper class you are, you're going to experience it later as opposed to now. You know what I mean? And so,
I'm a small business owner, and they already shut my CBD health down. So now I don't have my small business.
Yeah, it's a shame. And that's, you know, look, at most of the business in the United States was small business. And God forbid we ever have to depend on these corporations. They're our enemies. They're horrible.
Yeah.
So we gotta get together and stick together and do this, because, you know, it's bad. I mean, they're scratching at the eyeball of God, and that's the other thing. The other reason I know they won't win, because when you touch God's eyeball, what happens if somebody walks up and pokes their finger in your eye? Your hand comes up and swats them away. Well, let me tell you what, when God's hand comes up to swat us away, you're going to make no mistake about it. You're going to know that you've been smacked, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we got to hurry up and do this, because if we don't, then God's going to take care of it in his way, and you might not like that.
Yeah. We'll all be affected. Yeah.
Yes, that's right. So anyway, very nice talking to you, Sherry. And I also see that you're welcome, Sherry. That Brent Winters is in here, the author of Excellence of the Common Law, and he comes in and makes comments and gives a short dissertation on common law. And I'm going to go ahead and open him up. Actually, you are. Can you hear me, Brent?
Yeah, I'm unmuted. Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, well. You can do the rest of your introduction for anything I forgot.
Oh, okay.
Brent is a common law lawyer, commonlawyer.com. But go ahead, Brent.
Well, thanks, Gerard. This is Brent Allen Winters, commonlawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com. And this is not a common lawyer comments. Well, I suppose it is. It's not the official program. We have a program kind of on Patriot Soapbox, kind of like Gerard does on Wednesdays. We talk about a whole lot of things. I think, Gerard's on Wednesdays. I'm on Saturdays and Sunday mornings. You can go to commonlawyer.com and find out how to listen to me, and the way you click into me is the same way you click into Gerard on Wednesday mornings. But this is Brent, and we're, of course, in a serious mess. I don't know if I remember a mess this serious. I remember messes that were like this, as though we'd never seen election fraud before. We've seen that before. I remember that. 20,000 ghost boats out of the graveyards of Cook County, Illinois, put John Kennedy in office. Well, we had the same party do the same thing here recently. With same thing recently with putting Biden in, only it was much more sophisticated and much more widespread. Well, have we seen voter fraud before? Sure, we've seen voter fraud before. Have we seen germ warfare before? Sure, we've seen germ warfare before. Yeah, we've seen violence, Antifa, we've seen all that before. We saw all that back in the 60s or late 60s into the early 70s. They were burning the campuses down, burning the towns down. Same scummy bunch inciting the violence. It's always there. The labels change, but the same scummy bunch is still doing it. It's the Bolshevikis, that's what they used to call them, same bunch. And now it's they had the hippies. Before that, they had the beatniks. Before that, back before World War I, they had the Bohemian movement. Nothing changed. Same scummy bunch. I remember there were some of them. They were trying to market some kind of deodorant that smelled like body odor. They thought that was going to be the fashionable thing because people were taking pride in being scummy, not shaving, not taking a bath, and wearing dirty, ratty clothes. That was the style. Well, the same scummy bunch is encouraging that. If you want me to identify them, I'm not going to do it. Go do your own research on that. I'll be called a bigot if I say it, so I'm not going to say it. But it's the same scummy, egg-sucking, mangy bunch. Well, I had a fella ask me today. He called me. He's a shaker and a mover from around Indianapolis, and they've got enough states that have signed on to trying to put a balanced budget amendment under the Constitution. He called me and he said, I don't know what to do. I said, what do you mean, I don't know what to do? He said, well, we've got the number of states, 30-some states, that have signed on to this, and now we want to put it before the Congress so that they put it up for a vote to the state conventions. He said, how do we do that? I said, I'd write him a letter and tell my congressman or some congressman to introduce it. That's the way you do it. And he said, but what if they don't? Well, if they don't, there's not a whole lot you can do about it. And then we went through the list of how many amendments have been put up for being added to the Constitution that just stayed dormant for over 100 years. One of them, over 200 years, it was offered for ratification, and over 200 years later, it was finally ratified, I believe in the year 1992. I said, you can't make them do anything. They do whatever they want to do. I mean, isn't that obvious? There's nothing in the Constitution says we can make them put the thing out for a convention to get it onto the Constitution. He said, well, what's going on? I mean, don't we have a way to make this happen? I said, yeah, but remember, and then what he was resting on, he said, this is a majority rule situation here. I mean, the people want it. I said, yeah, majority of the people wanted Trump for president, too. I don't think it's an intelligent discussion to debate that. But then we got down to the point where we were saying again, yes, but our common law tradition is not a majority rule. It's not a majority rule way of government. The majority really has no way of ruling. He said, well, you always say the militia, the several states, has two duties, and that's jury duty and militia duty, and that's the two fundamentals of government. And I said, yeah, Brad, that's right. That's the two fundamentals the way I see it, and that's the militia, and That's the two duties they have. But I said, there's no majority in that anywhere. The militia duty is not a matter of any majority, and the being on the jury is not a matter of any majority. In fact, the jury duty that you that a fella serves on, it's a unanimous decision. It's 12 or nothing. It's 12 or zero, nothing in between. And then the grand jury is 12 or no indictment. Doesn't make any difference whether it's 12 grand jurors, 15 grand jurors, 23 grand jurors, or 48. It's still 12 grand jurors for indictment. That's not a majority rule principle. He said, well, then who makes the final decision? Who's in charge here? How do we know what the law is? I said, well, the law is the way things are, and they're not going to change. And the truth is, and this is the point we're trying to get to, after all the struggles I've had through the decades, like many of you have had, a little bit different. All of our struggles are different. But I've had to come down and say, well, what's the bottom line here? Where do I need to put my attention? If I really care about my country, what should I do? I've tried preaching. I've tried politics. I've tried going into the courts. I've tried arguing before the jury. I've tried representing people that were before the grand jury. And my conclusion, as a practical matter, where the rubber meets the road, is that the jury is the intended answer to our problems. The jury. All the other things that we can do, the committees of safety, are important. But the most likely way to stab the stake into the heart of the bloodsuckers, is the jury. It's the jury that ended prohibition in America. It wasn't some constitutional amendment. The constitutional amendment came after juries refused to indict people for the transportation and manufacture of alcoholic beverages. It was the juries that did it, case by case by case, painstakingly. Finally got so embarrassing to the prosecutors to try to bring prosecutions for it that they finally quit. And then somebody said, we got to end this madness officially, and so they passed a constitutional amendment. The constitutional amendment did not end prohibition. The juries ended prohibition. Constitutional amendment did not have any effect on the Fugitive Slave Act either. What had the effect on the Fugitive Slave Act? Grand juries and juries. They just finally said, we're not going to do this anymore. And it got to be a widespread problem for the government or anybody that wanted to prosecute such things. It didn't work anymore. It's not majority, it's not pitchforks storming City Hall. No, it's the jury. That's where the power is, the real power. And the decision of the jury is final. There is no appeal from the decision of a grand jury to indict somebody and bind them over for trial before the petit jury. There is no appeal of the grand jury who refuses to indict and bind the defendant, or not bind the defendant, over to the trial jury for trial. I remember back about 1980, I heard about a fellow that was instructing people on the grand jury in the state of Montana. He got on the television there, had got a lot of money behind him. He himself didn't have much money. He was a high school graduate. He was a high school graduate born, I think he was born in about 1928 or 29. So back in 1980, he would have been, well, 60-ish, long in there. And a little before that, well, no, it was about that time. And he put on a series of presentations, bought the television time all over Montana to educate grand jurors on what their duties are and what their power is. Just grand jurors. Didn't talk about trial jurors. Just grand jurors. And it had such a devastating effect on the government, on the prosecutors, that they didn't know what to do. And they didn't get indictment there for a certain crime that he was, or it wasn't a crime at all, that was a problem. He just wanted to stop the indictments, case by case. And he proved that that can be done if jurors know their office and the importance of their office. Remember, again, our common law government, we're a country of common law government. We're not even fundamentally a republic. Not fundamentally, no, no, no. And there's no place our Constitution says we are a republic. It does say that the general government in Washington, D.C., is supposed to guarantee to every state a republican form of government. A form of government, all that means, the Supreme Court has told us, they've weighed in on this question a few times, and they said, well, what that means is that you seat a state legislature and that you send senators and representatives to Washington, D.C., and if you've done that, then the federal government has no cause or jurisdiction to do anything else, just to make sure that's done, because you have to have a state legislature for the rest of the Constitution to work. It used to be you had to have a state legislature to choose your U.S. senator, see? So they had to guarantee that they had a legislature, and that's the republican form of government. And that does not give us our common law government. Matter of fact, if that's all you had was a legislature, you wouldn't have freedom. That'd be more majority rule, and we've proven that. England's proven it. That the national legislature is more dangerous than the king himself if he had all the power. Well, in a common law government, we have separate and co-equal branches of government. Separate and co-equal, that means none of the branches, none of the three branches of government have the final say over anything. And the fact is, nobody does then, do they? Except you, in individual instances, as a juror or a grand juror, you have final say from whose decision there is no appeal. Well, that's what we need to be thinking about, friends. And this is what the Bible says. And this is what our common law says. The three branches of government, separation of powers. King Saul, God ripped the kingdom from his power because he violated that separation of powers of three branches. He violated it as king, and he had his kingdom took from him, and it was given to that famous personality, David. That's how that happened. He was trying to gather all three powers of government into a single will, his own. And God said, I can stand a lot, but I'm not going to stand that among you mere mortals. And he doesn't. Well, that's why we say that in common law government, neither the Supreme Court, nor the Congress, nor the president, nor the governor of your state, nor your state legislature of your state, nor the Supreme Court of your state has the final, really final word on anything, because the other two branches of government, they're free to do what they want, what they think is constitutional and right. And by the way, they do it all day long, every day, all over our country. They just don't tell you about it. That's the way it's intended to be. I just heard about a case and read a case. What's this old gal's name that claims she's in charge of the House of Representatives? Pelosi. Yeah, she said, if you don't put a mask on in this chamber, I'm the big shot here. If you don't put a mask on, we're going to fine you $1,000 or $1,200 a day or some crazy thing. And there was some congressman there who wouldn't do it. And eventually, it was enough money to equal her annual salary as a congressman. And so she took it to the federal court and said, this ain't right. I want you to rule on this. And the federal court came back, this is recently, and said, we have no jurisdiction to say anything about what goes on in the chambers of the Congress of the United States. That's your business, not ours. We can't tell anybody what to do over there. Well, that's right. That's common law government. The courts have no jurisdiction over the Congress of the United States, and to tell them what their rules are to be, or what kind of a debate they can have, any more than the Congress of the United States can tell the courts how to run their business. Well, again, coming back to it, it's the grand jury and the jury, and I say that to encourage you to join us for the grand jury course. Sheriff Dar Leaf of Berry County, Michigan, nice enough to sit in with me and as we teach this course and help me teach it about who the grand jury is, what they do, and what their responsibilities are, et cetera, their power. I think we're moving into week 7 of 12 presentations once a week on Thursday morning. You can go to the website, commonlawyer.com, and figure out how you can join. We encourage you to do that. It keeps us going, too, by the way. We appreciate all those of you that have. Well, let's talk about it. The grand jury is secret. It's not taught in our law schools. It's not taught anywhere. It's the most important function, along with militia duty, the most important function of the militia. The people, and it is the most powerful office that anybody could ever have. You, as a grand juror or as a juror, have the power, the authority, and the power to say no to the most powerful government that's ever existed among Adam's race, the government of the United States. It's a lot of power. Thank God for our common law government. Juries don't exist anywhere else in the world. Well, that's a few words, Gerard. Thanks for letting me say a few words. I'll turn it back to you if you're still there.
Yeah, I'm looking for my mute button.
Okay.
I had to mute it out. I didn't want to disturb you.
Well,
yeah, that's very interesting. You know, I know one thing that... I learned quite by accident just from being active, you know, early on when we were doing court work and that. They never want to give you a jury trial if they can help it.
Well, that's
like
right.
The last thing that they'll do. As a matter of fact, I've seen cases won by people insisting on a jury trial. And them end up dismissing the charges because they don't want to go to a jury trial. I think the prosecutors are at the rate of it, to be honest with you.
I do, too. Yeah, there are exceptions, of course, but you know, you're right. They'll take you right up to the wire, and I've had this happen. Go to the courtroom, pay your jury fee, say, hey, let's go to the mat. You guys want to go to the mat? I'll go to the mat. And then walk up to the courtroom on the day of the trial, and there's a note on the door that says this trial will not occur today because the prosecutor has dropped.
Yep.
Now,
yep.
It's that. But remember, even if you go to trial and you get worried, you can still drop in the middle of the, you can say, well, I want to plea in the middle of the trial. But yeah, it's important that we use the jury. Go back to you, Gerard.
Yeah, and so that's all. That's a strategy in itself if you're fighting
that's right.
Local case. Just
that's
insist
right.
that you want a jury of your peers. And I mean, even in traffic stuff, they don't want to give it to you because it's a bench trial. And you say, well, is it over $25? Well, yeah. Well, according to the Constitution, you got to give me a jury trial, right?
I think it's $20, isn't it?
Or $20, excuse me. I guess I put inflation.
Pretty close. Yeah.
That was the Biden effect. Anyway, I just
went
up to $25.
Or $20. Yeah,
I mean, look, if everybody was educated and they knew where their rights came from and what the powers were, we'd be in just a better shape. And that's one of the reasons we're not. I mean, even when we early on when we were getting involved with the Bundys there, the ranchers,
uh-huh.
and all the fiasco that went on in their case and stuff, the way that they got off is they lost the jury. The jury couldn't stand it, and they found them innocent. right? And that's the power of a 12-person jury.
Yeah. I mean, if you think you really got a case and you've got the sympathy of the jury, that's what you got to have. You don't want the jury to operate like lawyers and have no feeling and just be calculated and say, well, here's what I think we can get away with. You want a jury that has feelings and sympathy. And if you've got the sympathy with you, then all you need to do is give the jury a peg to hang their decision on in your favor, because you've already got their sympathy. But you do have to give them a peg. You've got to say, well, you need to say here, I didn't do it. And by the way, get on the witness stand and say that, if it's true, of course. Don't lie about it. They'll figure that out. I reminded of the story I read about the guy. I think I told this. Maybe I didn't tell it on Patriot Soapbox Yard, but this was the fellow that got so famous in the Watergate hearings. He was an old man from, I believe, Alabama. He was an old lawyer. And he was grandstanding as a senator, I think, when he was questioning all the fellows, all the king's men there, all of President Nixon's men. But he said one time he was in a case down in Alabama, and it was about a boy, a teenage boy, that had backed his pickup truck up to another fellow's hog lot and stole a pickup load of his hogs and just took them. I don't know whether he was mad at him or what, but he took them, and he went to trial for theft, you know. And he had a jury with him, and this fellow said the jury came back in his favor and said not guilty. They were in the courtroom, and he was sitting beside this boy. And this poor, ignorant boy turned to his lawyer, and said loud enough for the jury and other people in the courtroom to hear, he said, does that mean I can keep the hogs?
Yeah.
Stuff like that really happens. And what do you do? Of course, it was too late. They had already said not guilty, see?
Yeah, no double jeopardy, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
God bless America. That's the way it works. It's a matter of process. And we follow the process, and our freedoms may be intact. Now, there are going to be some people, when you follow the process, they're going to get away. That's right. When they're afforded all those constitutionally protected pieces of process. But I'm trying to think of the fellow's name in England that said, Thomas More. He's the one that said, some of his friends were saying, we need to flatten all the laws to get at these evil people. Just flatten the laws. And he said, yeah, after you flatten the laws and you get your hand on the back of their scruffy necks, and then they turn around and there's all the laws are flattened and there's nothing between you and them and no way to protect you, then what are you going to do? And that's the truth. We want to follow process. You know, people talk about O.J. Simpson. Oh, they say he was guilty. Well, maybe he was. I don't know. But I know this. He got the process and the jury acquitted him. Well, they were all black. Well, that was the luck of the draw at that time. And what's wrong with a black man being tried by a jury of black men? Sounds to me like that'd be more of a peer situation than a bunch of white men. But maybe I'm wrong about that. But it seems to me like that we're not paying enough attention to process and making sure that even the guy that looks like he's guilty of sin gets every break that the law can give him, because the truth is God says he's entitled to it. And if God says he's entitled to it, I want to make sure he gets it. I'm not worried about... God says follow the process, due process. That's what we call it. And if you follow the process, he says over and over in the Bible that he has already... He doesn't say he will ratify the result. He says, I have already ratified the result up here in heaven where I live. So just follow the process. Back to you, Gerard.
Hey, who was the forefather that said he'd rather attend the troubles of two liberal? I don't know if that's the right word interpretation of the law rather than convict one person unjustly.
I've heard that too. I think, I'm not sure. It may have been Justice Jackson. He'd say things like that. That's in my head, but I don't recall.
Right. It was kind of a famous saying, but I've lost the words. But that's.
You know, let 20 or 10 or 2 guilty men go free, but don't convict the one that's innocent. It's better to let some guilty men go free. I agree.
Right. Without an unguilty man suffering all that egregious stuff. And it's important. So look at these things are going to be more important as we move along here in America for where we're at. We have to wake up and rediscover our heritage and our law and these things, you know, like juries, because I think, like you said, that's the answer.
Well, that's my conclusion. I say the answer as a practical matter. Because the rubber has to meet the road somewhere. Of course, still the deep conviction without Jesus Christ, men are doomed. So I have to start there. And we say that, and that's important to be said. Matter of fact, that is of eternal importance to say that. But then as a practical matter, now what do you do? How do I appropriate this freedom that I have in Jesus Christ, as the old-timers used to say it? And there are ways to do that. And the way to do that is by his law. What he says is right and what he says is wrong, and the way we do things. And men that have forgiveness of sin, and they know it because they know that Christ has forgiven them, then they have the confidence to put the rubber down on the road and make it go, because they're not worried anymore about eternal consequences. They know that their future is secure and all of their sins have been forgiven, as the book says. Not some of them, all of them. And once a fellow has that, he has a different kind of boldness. I mean, think about even the pagan man, these Islamicists. They think, of course, that they die in battle, that they get the virgins, 70 virgins or however many it is. They got this fantasy that they live by. Well, if you really believe that, here's another way to say it. What was her name? The gal. She was a nasty woman, and died a horrible death, but that doesn't mean that people like that are not, doesn't mean they're stupid. She said, freedom is just another word for nothing left to lose.
Oh, I use that one all the time.
Dennis Joplin.
Was that Joan Baez or something like that?
What's that?
Was that Joan Baez?
No, it was Janis Joplin, Terry.
Oh, Janis Joplin, right.
Yeah, freedom's another, well, that is true, because if you're not afraid of the future at all, then you have boldness that other people don't have. And the Christian man, the Christian woman are the only ones that can really have that kind of confidence. And it's, I know we're all mortal, and I know we all have faltering times, but when you read the book is the evidence of what God has said, and he said, that's what it amounts to. The Christian man, Jesus Christ said this way, said, he who the Son makes free is really free, or free indeed is the way the old translations put it. There's a freedom there that he can give that can't come from any place else. In other words, he is the author of freedom. There is no other author. And doesn't make any difference what kind of government we have. If you don't have Christ, you're in bondage. You're a slave to sin. And you're not going to get away from it, because you need a liberator. You're not going to be able to liberate yourself. Well, you can hear more about that on Sunday mornings on Patriot Soapbox. If you go there, we talk about those kind of things more prolifically, because we're right in the Bible going through it. But it is a fact, and it does bear repeating. If we're talking about freedom, it has to start there. If it doesn't start there, it will not be experienced. Now, if you live in a country where there are Christian folk that are genuinely Christian folk, you will receive the blessings of being around them. There's no question about that. I think history bears that out, and the Bible says it. But that doesn't mean that you'll have the lasting benefit, and it doesn't mean you'll have the consistent enjoyment of it. You know, people say, well, why is it, for instance, I was talking the other day, Gerard, it came to mind, and I used to have this, and I don't know where it is now, but Christopher Columbus, you know, the guy in 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. We all learned in school. I hope we learned. He sailed and sailed and sailed and sailed to find this land for me and you. But Christopher Columbus was a biblicist. And he had a Bible. And I have a copy someplace of his Bible with his margin notes. They made a facsimile of it years ago, and they were selling it. But in his margin notes that he wrote in the margin of his Bible, of course, that wasn't in English. He was Portuguese, wasn't he? He sailed for Spain, but I believe he was Portuguese. But in the margin of his Bible, he made notes. It was probably a Latin to Latin Vulgate or one of those, probably that version. That would have been the really only one available to mount anything. Yeah, at that time especially. And he had his notes in the margin. And when you look at what those notes say, and they've been translated so you can know what they are, it becomes apparent that the reason that he wanted to try to find a way to India is because he believed the prophets of the Old Testament had talked about it. He thought he saw that there, and that's what impelled him to do what he did. Now, he didn't find the way to India. He found something much more important, if you remember. He landed on an island there in the Caribbean. I just got a message. You got to check. Oh, yeah. No. I just got a note said he was Italian. I got this from an Italian friend.
I was
okay. Maybe he was. I'll have to look that up.
No, but anyway, he was. That's true.
He was Italian, but he went. No, I thought he was Portuguese. And he went to the Queen of Spain.
Yeah.
Vice versa.
Well, he was sailing under a different flag, but he was of Italian nationality.
Oh, okay. Well, he was a pretty good sailor, but by the time he got to the New World, he thought he was going to get to India. His crew was ready to slit his throat because they figured we'd gone far enough, and sailors are a very superstitious crowd because they're in dangerous places, and what goes on ships is a lot of superstition a lot of time, but then there's a lot of panic and a lot of discussion, and they decided it was time for a mutiny. Well, they finally ran into this island, and he named it after Jesus Christ. He named it San Salvador, Savior. And he, of course, they met the Indians there, and they got invited to supper, and they cooked them up a big meal. This is what I remember about it. And they had these big leaves of these big plants, and they wrapped these round things in them, and they put them in the ground next to hot coals, and they let them bake. And they pulled them out, and then they split them open. They had this white stuff on the inside, and they were steaming hot, and they put some kind of fat on it. And the sailor said it tasted really good. And they called it potato, with a B as in Bravo, B-A-T-A-T-O. And that was the potato that we, of course, enjoy very much now today. But apparently, it was in the southern United States, too, very popular, and the Indians there had large warehouses filled for to get them through the winter time with potatoes. So they gave us that. That was nice of them, and we've enjoyed it very much ever since. And if it hadn't been for the potato, the Irishmen wouldn't have come to America in such droves as they did. That's the way God works in the providence. Starved the poor Irish to death. Well, they used the potato, the evil empire did, to try to starve them out. That's the way they do. This is the stuff that's happened to us has happened all before in different ways. Like I say, germ warfare, trying to starve people to death like they did the Irish, and the Highland clearances like they did the Scottish. Well, all those people came to America, and it's been a very positive contribution, by the way, in the long run that happened that way, because whatever happens is bad. And maybe this is the thing that I try to remind myself about what's going on now, Gerard, and it looks pretty bad, but there are a lot of good things happening out of it. And the Bible says that everything that looks bad to you, if you belong to God, he's going to work to your good. So we have that confidence. We have the confidence of knowing the eternal future is secure. We have the confidence of knowing that no matter how bad it gets, God being God, he makes a straight lick with the crooked stick. And the crooked stick is us and all the terrible things that happen between us, and he turns that to the good of his people. And if there's enough of us here, a critical mass in America that belong to him, he's going to use that. So I don't want to be discouraged no matter what. Of course, as people say in general, he's going to win. Well, if he wins, I win. And by the way, he's never lost a battle, ever. Nobody can point that out to me. It's not in the Bible. It's not in history that I've ever seen. If he wants to win, he wins. If he engages, he doesn't go into battles to lose, and he doesn't. So here we are, Gerard. What do we do next? Maybe you can tell us.
Yeah. I don't get paid enough for that.
Well, I can apply God's standards for other people. I can tell other people. We were talking the other day, Gerard. I can tell other people what the Bible says. Then I think if I work hard, I can even tell them what it means by what it says. In other words, the original intent of the author. And that can take a little work, but I can do that and try to be consistent about that. It's easy to know what it says. You just read it. Well, that's what it says, but what does it mean? Well, that's important. But then the third step is, and Paul the Apostle explains this to Timothy, how does it apply? And the application is just, again, we're back to this individual instance thing. That's to you, and that's your job, and you have to do that. You have to make decisions for yourself between right and wrong and individual instances from which the decision there is no appeal as to you, just like the juror. And the jury, when you're doing it on behalf, you're doing it relative to somebody else, but moment by moment and day by day, your God demands that you do it for yourself, but you can't do that unless you know what the standard is. Well, do any of us know all the standard? The answer is no. But we are responsible to know and to work at it. That's why in L.A., I've heard the lady from Florida talking about taking the courses. Well, that engages your mind, and I didn't know that was in the Constitution. So take the courses. We're talking about the grand jury course. That's another one, but engage somehow. It starts with your mind, and if you don't engage your mind, the actions will not happen. Garbage in, garbage out, G-I-G-O, G-I-G-O. Whatever you put in to your computer will come out in your speech and your actions. Be careful to put in things that are worthwhile. Well, what's the most worthwhile information in the world? It is the will of your maker. The will of your maker is the most important information you could possibly ever put into your brain. Because if you do that, he says himself, he says, if you do that, then you will end up doing whatever you put in. And so that's why NLA said, well, let's talk about the laws of nature's God, or the laws of nature. You say, well, this isn't the Bible. This is the Constitution. That's the laws of nature's God. And the laws of nature, as our Declaration of 76 says, that's the Bible. The laws of nature's God is the Bible. The laws of nature is our observations. Our observations of the world around us, the way relationships between men work, and we gather this information over centuries, we call it our common law. You want to learn the common law? Is it consonant with the Bible? Yes, it is. Our common law has always said and still says, this is our common law. If it is contrary to the Bible, even though we thought it was part of our common law, it isn't. We've made a mistake. The Bible is the final rule of faith and practice because it's fixed and it's fixed and it's precise. It's more precise. But our common law is where it's the nexus that allows the rubber to meet the road, as I'd said a while ago. So, where do you dive in? How do you start? Well, what you need to do is let it tackle you. Instead of you trying to tackle it so much, how do you let it tackle you? You start engaging with it. And it really doesn't make any difference where you start engaging. Just start engaging. Engage your mind. And these courses that are available, do you realize how much work? You look at some of those books that are up there on the NLA site. A lot of information. It took a lot of hard work. There are people who actually care about their country and try to hold these meetings, try to write the books, try to get the information out, do, as the one fellow says, do something. Something. Don't just sit there. And once you start moving, if God wants to take the rudder and take you where he wants you to go, he'll do it. But he will not do it unless you're moving. You got to put the sails up, let the wind catch them, and he will steer you where he wants you to go. And remember, he is sovereign, and he is in total control of everything. So you can trust him for that, too. But you got to get moving. Back to you, Gerard.
Well, one of the biggest complaints that I have and that I hear is that common sense is dead.
Yeah.
And that it's uncommon. And it is. But the reason for that is because people aren't studying. People aren't taught how to think anymore. And look, if you study common law, what are you going to get? You're going to end up developing common sense, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't help it. But when you go through those things and you start learning the fundamental principles that these things are based on, then you can go ahead and go further. But if you don't know any of the fundamental principles, you don't really have a roadmap, do you?
No, that's right, Gerard. That's an excellent point. When I went to San Francisco Bay, or as we say, Frisco Bay, as I like to say, just to tick the people off there because they hate that. I don't particularly like them, but I was there, and I didn't know my way around, and I had a 1974 Monte Carlo. Mm-hmm. And it was used. I bought it. It was a nice car, maroon with a vinyl top. Had a I believe those things had 350s in them. Did they, Gerard, or do you remember?
Yes,
a 350. That was a nice car, I even got a girlfriend with that car, by the way. And I ended up marrying her. Yeah, that's what happened. Her dad told her, she said, should I be hanging around with him? And her dad said, well, he's got a nice car. Well, that means maybe he's making payments. Well, I'd say, well, yeah, give him a try, if he's making payments, which was true. Well, at any rate, what's that?
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, as I was out there in the San Francisco, I didn't know my way around, and my buddy from, where was he from? He was from Flandreau, South Dakota. That was it. Yeah, big Norwegian fella. And I had a car, so he hung out with me so he could get around. But he took me out to that island in the middle of the in the Frisco Bay. I don't know how to pronounce the name of it. It was it's a Spanish name, but there's the Oakland Bay Bridge goes to that island, then it goes on over to San Francisco. It's the split in part. Well, he took me out that island, and he said, okay, over here's, you see, there's Telegraph Hill, and there's Frisco, and then over here's Berkeley. We looked the other way to the left, and there's Berkeley, and he looked behind us. He said, there's Oakland and Alameda over there. He said, have you got it? I looked around. I said, yeah. He said, You just look around when you're near the bay and you can see these landmarks and you can get around this bay real easy. And I found that to be true. And you'd made the point, Gerard, if you got some road markers, you've got the big picture here of the common law a little bit, then when you see some more minute thing or some particular, you kind of know where it is in the layout of the land, the lay of the land, and you can get around a little bit and know where things fit. But you got to get the big picture. Well, you don't got to, but it sure does help once you do that. So what do we need here? Well, we need a bit of a guide. Every man has a little guide, somebody to teach him or read a book. There's a man teaching you some of the fundamentals. Gerard, I told this story about Vince Lombardi. He was really addicted to the fundamentals. He never got away from them and won 3 world championships of the Green Bay Packers. But somebody I was listening to the other day told the story about Jack Nicholson. Who was the golfer? Jack Nicholson? Was that it? I think.
Nicholas.
Yeah. And I forget who it was. It was some other famous golfer that he, this other famous golfer, Jack, was his idol. And he learned a lot of things from him, got to know him. And every year he went back to Florida where Jack was, and he got together with him, and he said, Jack, I just wanted to come down. I wanted you to go through the basics with me, the fundamentals with me again. And this is a professional, successful golfer. And he'd say, okay, here's how you grip the club. Okay, here's how you take your stance with your feet. And they would go over them again. Well, these guys knew their game. And they knew their game well enough to know that they weren't going to get caught up in the details. They were not going to unanchor themselves from the fundamentals, and that spelled their success. If you learn the fundamentals of our common law, you'll never get away from them. No matter what you look at, if you're on the grand jury and you look at a case and you say, wait a minute, this guy is not getting a fair shake. Well, how do I know? Because I know what due process is a little bit. I know the fundamentals of what is. What are the fundamentals of due process? notice of the time and place of the contest, and a meaningful opportunity to respond. That's the most fundamental statement, definition of due process at common law there is. Remember, our common law does not include due process. Our common law is due process. It is the way we go about doing things, not what we go about doing. That's not what we stress in our common law country. That's not even what our Constitution is. Our Constitution is all about how we go about governing, how our government is supposed to work, the limits we put on it, and the way it functions, the relationship between the branches of government, and how we are to get know who our president is. Not who's going to be president, but how we're supposed to find out. It's all about how, and that means process, that means a course, that means a way. And so if you get on the grand jury and you know some of these fundamental differences between the law of the land, our common law due process, and the law of the city, which due process doesn't really matter. The only thing that matters to them is that we reached a result that the legislature says we got to reach in any case, criminal or civil. It's that way in the rest of the world. Here, we don't focus on the result. We focus on the process, due process. We get our eyes right on the path, and we keep the straight and narrow. We follow what the law says is going to give everybody a fair shake, as I said a while ago, notice to the other party of the time and place of the contest and a meaningful opportunity to prepare and respond. Well, if you know that definition, you have to ask yourself, well, respond to what? Is there going to be a fight? And the answer is yes, there's going to be a fight. It's called a trial. And in the other countries, they don't have trials. They just have inquisitions. The civil canon laws, it's inquisitional. It's not adversarial. Our common law is adversarial. We go to court and fight. It's a contest. And it's a contest according to the rules. But you got to have a notice of the time and place of the contest. This is due process, see? Fundamentally, there's a lot more to it than that. But that's just at the bottom line, in individual instances, that's what it boils down to. If there's going to be a fight, hey, I'll meet you outside. You've seen boys say that when you were young. Well, I'll just meet you down to boys' room. We'll settle this. Well, that's given notice of the time and place of the contest. And then if he needs opportunity to respond, that doesn't mean go to your locker and get a set of brass knuckles. That's not fair. But it means that you have a fair fight. I remember one time I was in high school, it was by that time of the morning, we were all down in the boys' room. Of course, some were back behind the partition back there where the commodes were. It was an old building built in 1898, and they were back there smoking cigarettes, as the boys did before class, and we were out front, and it was a great big round thing where you wash your hands, you know, you step on this thing on the bottom, and water come out. It was all made of a stone kind of a material, and we were all in there. All of a sudden, one of the Carver boys walks in with one of the Jackson boys, and Billy Baker was there. And Billy Baker was sitting on the edge of that big round thing, and Marshall Jackson comes up to him and says, I don't like the way you're talking to my sister. And I happened to be in there, and the Carver boy had shut the door, and he wasn't going to let anybody out. And he said, I don't like the way you're talking to my sister. And Billy Baker's a big boy. He was my friend. Well, Jack, all of them were my friends, but Billy was a big boy. And Jackson just said, I don't like the way you're treating my sister. Or talking to her. And Billy didn't say anything. And Billy said, well, I don't want to mistreat your sister. And he said, well, if I don't like it, what are you going to do about it? He was trying to egg him on to a fight, Jackson was. And maybe he did say something to his sister. I don't know. I remember her, too. She was in my class. And then all of a sudden, I don't know what happened, and Billy jumped up. He realized he wasn't going to get out of it, and they went at it. And it was a draw when it was over. But the Carver boy stood over by the door and wouldn't let anybody in or out. And I talked to him later about it. They were a rough bunch from over there in Cumberland County. But I talked to him later. And he said, well, we just wanted to make sure the fight was fair and nobody interfered. And we knew that the people that were in the boys' room right at that moment wouldn't interfere. So it was a fair fight. No kicking, no gouging, no sucker punches, no kicking in the groin, no biting. Well, that's what common law due process is. It's a fight according to the Queensbury rules, to put it in the boxer's terms. You know, the boxers fight according to the rules. And that's what our common law is. It's a fight, but it's a fair fight. That means according to the rules. And without that attitude about fair play, and we don't get it, by the way, the government, the prosecutors, would do anything to get out of a jury trial. What's a jury trial? Well, that's fair play. That's what it is. And they hide evidence, as we know now, we see on the internet. Well, that's not fair play, friends. That's not fighting a fair fight. They ought to be ashamed of themselves. Why do they do that? Why do police officers break into people's homes and try to find evidence when they're not home? Happens all the time. That's not fair. That's not due process, you see. That's not how, H-O-W, we should do things in America. We've lost our dignity, do you see? We've lost our honor. We've lost our decency. I don't care how other people treat you, please. Whatever you do, be decent and chivalrous to other men and women. That doesn't mean you have to take their guff. Doesn't mean you have to submit to their evil. But there must be dignity, and that's what I see is missing too, Gerard. Yeah, I feel like I'm talking like the old guys used to talk when I was a kid, but they were trying to maintain that kind of dignity too, and I see that it's gone. Back to you.
Yeah, that's very good. I agree with everything you said. I just want to recommend that some of the things that you can do that are easier that help, because look at this stuff sounds boring. You're going to read this, you're going to read that, and it's really not. Once you start, it actually is interesting. So one of the things that I spent a lot of time with that I enjoyed very much was the lectures by Lysander Spooner, Trial by Jury. And we have them on our site. They're free. It's like 20 audios. And there's a PDF. You can read it also. I think we have the book. But if you go to the Education Starts Here tab and you go down to Articles and Essay, you have a Trial by Jury essay, Articles and Essays, and you got the The Battle of Celestia Creek. I think that's where the people went in and had a little revolution where these guys were taken over to government in a small town. But that Trial by Jury really sets out a lot of the fundamental basics that you should know. And it's interesting, and it's very easy to get through, I think. I think everybody should go through them once anyway. Anyway, that's just my two cents. I'm giving you a...
Well, I'm going to listen to him, Gerard, because I read that book about trial by jury. It had been 20 years ago now, and I didn't notice that you had it up there in audio, and that appeals to me a lot. And it was easy reading. I enjoyed the book, and I learned a lot. And I encourage other people to listen to these. I intend to do that myself.
Yeah, you can even listen to them when you're driving. Like if you download them, they're MP3s. You can put them on a player, put them on your radio, you know. And that's the way that we also learn law course by that lawyer, and John turned them into audios.
Jurisdictionary.
Yeah, whenever I went someplace with John, that's what was on his radio. Jurisdictionary. 3 hours of Jurisdictionary, but it was good, and you'd be surprised what you can pick up from stuff like that. But, Jurisdictionary was maybe a little bit more dry, although, when you're learning something that you had questions, I'll tell you what, if you ever went into the court and you didn't know what was going on and you were really ticked off and you didn't really know what happened, you take that Jurisdictionary course and you'll be interested, believe me, because it'll answer a lot of the questions that you had, and then you'll even get some questions you didn't even know you had. So... That's another good one, the Jurisdictionary, to get to wet your whistle on. So we do have a couple of people in the queue, and maybe I should start taking them now. It's kind of getting down to the wire. Let me see here. Let's start this way here. We got Michael from Michigan, it looks like. Go ahead, Michael. You're unmuted.
Yeah, Gerard, I just want to say something. I was listening to your last week's show, and I'm thinking, well, why can't we get in? And you had us muted, so you
couldn't. Oh, that was my problem. I didn't click it, and nobody told me, and okay. So I had a very quiet meeting.
So I don't really want to focus on that, but is Brent still within an earshot?
Yeah, he's still here. He can hear you.
Okay. Well, Brent, what you said that like what we're talking about the Constitution, but you said the you made the comment the Republican form of government is only what it says. It's a form only.
Yes. Yeah.
So I thought that was pretty astounding to me. Being only a form, of course. Then you culminated that with connecting that to common law, and common law is the law of nature. It's the individual's following of the law of nature. Correct?
Yes, it's the way things are in our natural world. And William Blackstone, in his first volume of his commentaries, he breaks that down even more, and it's. Not like he didn't make it up. He's just observing. There are things in this world we look around between objects and persons and animals and the relationships and all the things that happen according to precise laws, he says. Well, he's right. And who made those laws? Well, the Creator is the author of the laws that we observe in our world around us. The laws of perpetual motion, the laws of gravity, the laws of hydrology, the laws of whatever law we think about in physics, and also then the laws of relationships between men, and therein lies the basis of our common law. But our common law, people say our common law comes from the Bible. It doesn't. Our common law does not come from the Bible. It comes from our God, just like our common law does, or like our Bibles does. Our Bible and the common law come from the same source, therefore they must be consistent. And as the old-timers used to say, they must be consistent because the Godhead is consistent among the persons of the Godhead. There is perfect unity and perfect consistency. And that, by the way, is even pronounced not only in the Bible, that's fundamental to understanding who God is, the consistency of the Godhead, and that God's people have recognized that for 4,000 years. If you go back to the writings of Moses, you see those concepts playing out. The most oft quoted creed in the history, the oldest quoted creed throughout the world yet today, is Deuteronomy chapter 6. Shema Yisrael Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Echad. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is Echad, oneness. The Lord, that means, and this talks there about that, it's talking there about the Godhead. If there's perfect unity and perfect consistency, and Jesus Christ said, whatsoever I see the Father do, I do. You have seen me, you have seen the Father, he says. I and the Father are one. One in will, one in consistency, one in integrity, and the Spirit of God as well. It says that. Well, if there is that kind of consistency there, then everything that emanates from the Godhead, which is creation, must be consistent among itself too. And without that, there would be no scientific investigation and no scientific conclusions, because there are laws that we investigate. We discover them. And our common law is a significant slice of that. Now, back to the idea of republicanism. We are not a republic. America is not a republic. I try to repeat this often. It's popular among patriot groups to say that it is. It's a mantra they repeat. I don't know that people think about it that much. But the communist countries called themselves republics for a reason. They also called themselves democracies for a reason. The French revolutionaries and the revolutionary France called itself a republic. China still calls itself a republic. Why do they call themselves republic? Because they have based communism, for instance, bases, and revolutionary France bases everything that it does upon the law of the city, the code of Justinian, the canon civil laws of Rome. The code of Justinian being the most complete expression of that from the 6th century. Well, in that law, according to that so-called law, the democracy is God. The voice of the people, said the Roman Empire, is the voice of God. Well, what does that really come down to? It comes down to the 51% of the people crushing the other 49. That's what it comes down to. And the people that made well known through their writings what a democracy is, the Greeks, they also made well known what a republic is. And they made no distinction between a republic and a democracy. They're both principles of majority rule, and both of them result in tyranny always. And so it is a ruse of the evil empire to get us to repeat that mantra. They want us to say, we are a democracy, and then then they say, oh, no, you can say this, we're not a democracy, that's evil, we're a republic. That's the same thing. It's the same thing applied a little bit differently. But a republican form of government means that you have a legislative body. Back during the English Civil War, they cried, we are a republic and we are republicans. We are a republic and we are republicans. And what did that mean to them during the Revolution in the 1640s? That meant that the national legislature was sovereign. That's what that meant. And we find out, reading history, that that didn't work. After our own break from Britain, some states decided, now we're free of the king. We'll let the legislature of our state control. They found out they didn't want that because legislatures are more tyrannical, even. It's harder to control their tyranny, more so than just one man, like a king or an emperor or whatever you call him. But if he gathers all three branches of government into his single hands, then that's the definition of a tyrant, and that's what legislatures do. That's what they called that in England back then when they were trying to wrest power from the king, who was evil. I mean, God bless them for trying to figure out how to get this thing going, but they found out that the tyranny of the legislature, the parliament, was worse than that of the king, and as soon as parliament got in power, it was worse. The blood spurted even greater, and they executed more people. And so people fled to America. And when they fled to America, they took those lessons with them. That's why they said when we gained our separation from Britain, we said, we're going to establish our common law government. Of course, we already had a common law government, but they said, we're going to make it firm. We're going to firm it up. And we're going to fashion it more on the order of the Anglo-Saxons before the Norman invasion. I'm in good company here. I'm quoting Justice James Wilson on the first panel of the U.S. Supreme Court. He made that point. Our government is more akin, and we're harking back, trying to capture the common law as it stood before the Norman invasion, when they got confused again over that. Separate and co-equal branches of government. Neither branch, none of the three branches, having the authority as a matter of law to trump the other, just as God lays forth in Isaiah there, and in other places in the Bible you see it too. That's our old common law government, been around for centuries. They put that in place, and then they said, but we have, and our courts have called it the political aspect of our common law government. The political aspect of our common law government. Fortescue in the 14th century, 15th century, the 1400s, that's what he called it. He called it the political aspect. What is the political aspect? It is the legislative branch. If there's anything we don't want, is politics. We can see that doesn't get us anywhere. Can't we figure that out? But we have this political branch of government that is purely hardcore political. That means all they worry about is staying in office. We got to have them. We need a republican form. We need that branch of government. That's what God says, but confine that political branch to that political branch, and they can do all that ugly political stuff. Politics, that's law of the city. Polis, the city. Politics, policy, police, as opposed to peace officers. We went over that in our course, with Sheriff Darr. So I'm on a campaign, of course. I am under no illusions that people are going to follow me, and it's going to catch on, but I don't want people to say that we're a republic. We aren't. Our common law government is common law government. That's what it is, and that's different than anything in the world. Republicanism is not different than anything in the world. One more point. Isn't it something that the two major political parties in America, their names are synonymous, Republicans and Democrats. The Greeks didn't distinguish the two, and people really haven't since. Back to you, Gerard, or whoever has the floor.
Well, Brent, I would make a comment that your comments aren't short, but they're thorough. I would want to mention one other thing. This was concerning last week's call, and John Wycliffe was brought up in that, and I was just I was actually studying John Wycliffe that night, but you guys had a pretty exclusive two-way conversation going there. But the Catholic clergyman named Wycliffe, who had access to the truth, began to see scriptures become a common property to all, that there might be a government of the people, by the people, for the people. And I thought that was kind of interesting. You guys were studying him. And one last thing, and I'll digress into the clouds or whatever. But we were talking about individuality. And Brett, what's your opinion of when the word sovereignty comes up? Can that be inclusively, in your opinion, given to an individual that is a follower of God's law, and that being an individual, that his ideas and only his and his thoughts are only his as the individual that follows God, and that and one last thing, that by saying that this should cause individuals to claim their own ideas and thoughts instead of being led by others, and culminating and using the word sovereignty, but only in the respect of the dominion that God gave his image on this earth.
Well, your comments are important and insightful, and I appreciate you being indulgent of my long responses, because, well, that's it. Nice of you to say that. I know that it can get old, but for what it's worth, I cringe when I hear patriots say that they're sovereign citizens. From the biblical perspective, that borders on blasphemy, because sovereignty is.
I attach the word dominion that the sovereign gave us.
I caught that, and that was good, and I understand that that was Wycliffe's point. So I assume you're reading something about Wycliffe. Wycliffe was a dominionist, and he wrote a long essay on the subject and made his point. But I'm not talking about you. I'm just saying in general, when people, I've seen people go into court and really get themselves in trouble claiming that, and the powers that be have labeled the sovereign citizen movement as dangerous, and it will hurt you. But beyond that, sovereignty is an absolute idea, and only God is sovereign. There are no other sovereigns in the creation. But we don't have a word in our English tongue to talk about the authority that God has delegated to us, for instance, as jurors, right on to us, and he said, I'm delegating this discernment to you, and you have sovereignty on land. Not in the skies, but on land. And right. Whatsoever you decide, if you follow due process, I've already ratified in the skies. But so we use the word sovereignty, but we call it, for example, limited sovereignty, which is a contradiction in terms, but we don't have any other words to use. So when we're acting in that capacity as a juror, for instance, Jesus Christ said this, He was quoting Psalm 82, his ancestor David, when he said, "Ye, plural, are gods." Speaking of the militia of the 12 tribes of Israel, the people. Ye, plural, are gods, small g. What does that mean? Well, that means that small g, when you serve on the jury, this is the concept, your decision is final, and there is no appeal from it. Now, what is the definition of a god? The definition of a god is someone to whom you attribute and recognize, whether you're right or wrong, you attribute the authority to make a final decision, and from that decision there is no appeal. Now, if you recognize that the maker of all things has that authority, and that is the most powerful power in God's creation, is to be the final decider of right and wrong in individual instances, and from that decision there is no appeal. That's our maker. There is no appeal from him. He is the sovereign. He is, as the Declaration of 76 says, he is the supreme judge of all the world. There is no appeal from him. But sovereignty, I understand what, if people say limited sovereignty, we don't have any other words to use. I've looked to try to find another word. I can't find one. But that is the sovereignty that we have in a limited sense down here on land. And I like the idea you're talking about when you bring it up about the sovereignty according to the dominion that God has crowned us, the Bible says, mankind, with out of his holy imagination. We call it the image of God. We are the crowning of his creation, and he has delegated to us, as Wycliffe recognized reading the Bible, he has delegated to us not the option, but the duty to dominate the land that he has given us. And to control, that means to defend the land, that's the militia duty, to defend the land against enemies foreign, that's militia duty, and enemies domestic, that's to serve on the jury to defend the law of the land. That's the conclusions I've come to. But how many people do I talk to who say, well, I've, in my spare time, I've been reading the writings of John Wycliffe, and you're one of those few, I suppose.
Hey, Brent?
Yeah, I'm here.
What about the term of the branch of government? You had three branches, and they say they have clipped sovereignty.
What do they call it, Gerard?
Clipped sovereignty.
That sounds. I get that. That's limited sovereignty. Using the analogy, I take it of clipping the wings of a bird.
Right, and that's what they show. And I mean, that, you know, you have the Congress, the Senate, and then the executive, and they each have a clipped sovereignty.
Right, yeah.
They have to share it with the other branch, so it's not total, it's clipped, right?
That's good. You heard, you read somebody that explained it that way, or what?
Oh, yeah, I think it's in the book, The 5,000-Year Leap. They explain the republic, and they explain the branches of government, and I do seem to remember, I should open that book up again as a review, just like you're talking about, the golfers going over the fundamentals.
Doesn't
hurt us to go through. I'd like to pick that book up again because there's a lot of good stuff in there about, you know, that's a great book for homeschooling too. The 5,000-Year Leap. It's something that we started on very early, and I tend to forget about it, but I'll tell you what, it's right there at your fingertips. It's kind of like the Lysander Spooner tapes. Very easy to pick up, very, very readable, and it's not boring at all, anyway.
How many grandchildren do you have?
I have six.
Are you homeschooling them, or somebody's homeschooling them? Is that what?
Well, right now they're just entering school age. They're all very young, and yes, they're all being homeschooled. There's nobody in public school yet, and I don't believe there's any intention for anybody to put them in public school.
And this
pandemic has completely convinced them to stay the hell out of the school. I'm sorry. You know, it's so bad.
Shall we stop using that word?
What's that?
Shall we stop using the word pandemic?
Yeah. you mean scandemic? I'm sorry. It's a scandemic.
No, this isn't like a blood over the doorpost.
No. Well, it's pretty bad, and it's all a lie. It was a lie, and it's all going to come out eventually. And when it does,
I think the bad movie is coming to an ending.
Well, when it comes out, there's going to be a lot of people with their jaws on the ground. because they're not going to they're not going to be able to handle the fact that almost everything that they learn and everything their government told them was a lie. You know, and that all these wars that we've been in through all the years that it was all about money, and it was all about the military industrial complex, and you know, all kinds of, you know, yeah. So and it's never stopped since we broke from England. They've had their fingers, you know, in our stuff since then. We've never really broken away from England, really. And this is just the culmination of all that through all these years. I give them one thing. They've been very patient about taking little tiny steps and little tiny steps to get us to here where we are. And I think it was Khrushchev that said, we're going to take you over without firing a shot. Well, they just about did that now, didn't they? And,
hey,
and
may I ask one more thing?
Yeah.
Brent's comment and in the course of history, what does he think that the Act of 1871 did?
Well, I haven't, for what it's worth, I haven't seen any evidence that persuades me that it did anything. And I have no recognition. I have no evidence of any recognition in any court, any bankruptcy court. People talk about it a lot. I don't see that it amounts to anything. Now, it does seem to me that de facto, a lot of rotten things are being done. But I don't see that the Act of 1871 had any direct effect that's lasted. That's like saying during the war between the northern and the southern tiers of the states, military districts were established. And then that people turn around and say, and they've never been disestablished. Well, it's true there were military districts established, but I don't see any evidence in the law that those military districts are still there. As a matter of fact, I see evidence in the decisions of the courts that they were done away with. And even if they were there, and even if the Act of 1871 meant anything, if it's unlawful, it's not real. I don't care what they do.
Yeah.
Well, that's my take on it. In other words, I think some of these things, I used to teach a class called Patriot Mythology. And this is one of the things we talked about. There are a lot of things that patriots get caught up in that are distractions by the useful idiots of the evil empire. They're not stupid. They get patriots distracted on things that waste their energy, waste their attention. Bottom line, what God wants patriots to do, what is a patriot? A patriot, the word defines itself, patria. It's in the Bible, in the Greek New Testament. But what it means is, the root of it means father. Patriarch means father rule, for instance. And patria, a patriot, means love of fatherland. Anglo-Saxon is a Germanic tongue, and so land in the Germanic tongues is male. Not male, that's wrong. Masculine, be gender. Masculine. And in the Latin tongues, like French, for instance, a land is feminine. So in the Anglo-Saxon, it's masculine. We call it patriotism. It means love of land. And if God wants those that love the land that he has given them, everything revolves around land in God's understanding of government. If we love the land, then we will do. Love is to do what he tells us to do, respecting his land. And what he tells us to do, respecting his land, is to not covet, lie, steal, commit adultery, or murder your neighbor while you're on this land. Because if you do that, it pollutes the land. That's what he says. And he says, you pollute my land, and I'll vomit you off of it. And if you do it enough, how bad is it getting here? It's getting pretty bad. Pretty bad. We are presently under judgment. And the greatest indicia, according to the Bible, the greatest indicia, the most obvious indicia of that judgment is the rule being ruled over by women and children. Women and children. That's what the book says. So don't argue with me about that if you don't agree. You can argue with the book. No. Argue with God, because that's clear and unambiguous. And here we are. And the question is, what shall we do? Well, how then shall we live, as the prophet says? Peter the Apostle said that. How then shall we live, knowing these things? Well, we know it. What are we going to do? Well, the answer is always the same. The answer is always to do what he tells us to do, and he has given us the mind of Christ. We have it in our very hands. It's called the Bible. Those are the sentences of the thoughts of the Godhead. It's all right there. And he reveals his will and the will of the sovereign, and he is the sovereign. The will of the sovereign is law. And the love of God is defined as keeping his commandments. That's the way John defines it. That's the way Jesus Christ defines it. Jesus Christ said, if you love me, if, talking to the disciples, the 12, the jury, 12-man jury he had impaneled to testify, to witness, to give a verdict concerning his identity. He said, if you love me, just do what I tell you to do. I mean, it's that simple. Well, we got to know what it is he's telling us to do, and then we have to figure out what it means by what it says, and then we have to see how it applies in individual instances, moment by moment, day by day, in our own lives. And only we can decide that on an individual basis. Well, Gerard, we're down to 7 minutes left, and I've been talking a lot, and I want to get off and let somebody else maybe.
Nice talking to you, John.
Nice talking to you. Thanks.
Yeah, I'm gonna pull up this Detroit, Michigan's been waiting forever here. Hang on, I'll unmute them. We'll see if they got something quick. Go ahead.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Yoletta from Detroit, Michigan, and I heard you mention someone with meetings here in Michigan. And I was wondering if there's already a committee started in Wayne County, or is this something I need to move forward to do?
Well, I do believe we have a listing of committees of safety. I don't know. I think Jan could help you with the who's in that county, or Francine has the list. I mean, did you went in and looked up your county and who was there and any names on there?
This is so very brand new to me, so no, I haven't.
So if you go on our site, if you go on the site, National Liberty Alliance, there is a directory. You can put in the state and the county and see who's around you. And I do believe, I'm pretty sure we started a listing of committees of safety, if I'm not mistaken, who the main guy is to get a hold of in those committees of safety. I don't know if that thing has come to fruition yet. Do you know if it has or not, Jan or Francine? Do we actually have a compiled list of committees of safety? I know that was something we talked about doing.
Yeah, you can go on the website and get on the start a committee of safety and scan down and click on your state and then your county, and it'll tell you for the state who the committee of safety directors are that have volunteered.
Okay, so you got that, right?
Yes, I'm here now. Thank you so much.
Okay, very good. So I'm glad we could help. That was easy. I'm glad I took you. And with that, I'm going to say goodnight. We've a good show. We did pretty good. And we'll be back next week, same time, same station. Thank you.